You're listening to Leadership Podcast, a series of short, insightful discussions with experts in the field of volunteer leadership. Brought to you by the Aria Center for Leadership Development, your interviewer is Elaine LaChapelle.
I'm speaking with Brad Quinn and Linda Moore from TNG. Brad and Linda work with leaders and organizations on leadership, strategy, and governance. And today we're talking about building better boards. So I guess I'd like to start with a question on what the biggest misconception is that people have about being a director on a board.
Well, I think the one that we hear over and over again is that the member is there to represent the voice of a larger group of people. That they come onto the board feeling as though they have to be one voice representing many voices in the public. When the truth of it really is that no one person, director or otherwise, can be the voice for a whole bunch of people. So when directors come on, they think they have to have that voice and be that voice all the time, when in fact the decision making is better when you have more perspectives brought into the room than any one director could possibly bring.
Oh, interesting. Okay, good. So now, you know, directors working with executive officers, let's kind of take each side of this. From an executive officer perspective, what do you find to be the most common complaint from EOs related to their board of directors?
I think a lot, for most of them, it's that their board of directors gets into the weeds. And I think that they do that simply because that's what they're also used to. Many of the people that are on the board are used to being operational in their own businesses, and therefore they bring that. So I think one of the biggest issues for an EO is to make sure that they're bringing the information at the right level to a board. So that if they're bringing operational issues, the board will deep dive in a second.
Right.
And if they bring it at a more strategic level and more of a decision-making level, the board will tend to raise up to meet that.
Now that may lead to the answer to my next question, but the kinds of things that EOs can do to help keep directors at that level. You've mentioned bringing strategic work. Other things they might do?
Yeah, I think having clear roles and responsibilities up front so that when directors come on or directors are there for a while, they're clear about what's expected of them in that capacity. Too often we do find that role clarity isn't there, so directors can overstep what is expected of them, and then the EOs are stuck kind of off guard because all of a sudden they're needing to be a little bit, pushing back a little bit more on those directors, and that can be an awkward place for an EO to be, you know, either to have the courage to say, I'm sorry, this is sort of not the place where we need your contribution right now, or to be able to correct a behavior that really wasn't expected to begin with.
The interesting thing there is that it sounds like it's an unintended consequence, that it's because of a lack of understanding that the person's doing this, not that they intend to make life miserable for an executive officer, right?
Yeah, almost always, for sure. These people are volunteers. They come wanting to do the best they can for the organization. And it's sort of a failure of the governance system, if you want to call it, that they aren't clearer about what is expected of them, and maybe more importantly, what's not expected of them. Because a good job description or role description will tell you what we want from you, but it's sometimes what we don't want from you that causes the biggest issue in the boardroom.
Sounds right, right. Oh, so let's flip it then. What's the most common complaint you hear from directors about their executive officers and the work with them?
I think oftentimes they feel as though that they're really just there to rubber stamp what the executive officer wants in terms of running the organization. The executive officer taking kind of an ownership, thinking it's their association, it's their board. And so I really believe that part of that is having the board of directors take back. This is our job, and that comes through setting the agenda, for instance. If there's certain issues, strategic issues they want to discuss, or certain things that they want to see happen on behalf of the real estate board, then it's really up to them to begin to start setting the agenda and determining what it is that they want to talk about and the decisions that they want to make.
Is that the I guess the most strategic way for them to do it? Are there other things they can do if they're feeling that's happening within their association?
Well, again, it's a relationship. There needs to be a trusting relationship between the executive officer, who is the long-term, sustainable leader of the organization, and these, you know, somewhat transient, if you want to call it politely, directors who come on, they stay for their term, and then they move on to other aspects of their life. So from the EO's perspective, they're constantly balancing and rebalancing the expectations of this group that's, you know, changing its composition regularly. So I do think that the executive officers should find more creative ways to engage all of the directors in those strategic conversations. And just because they're only there for a short term, not to overlook that they have some strategic insights. I guess it would be tempting, I suppose, of an EO to just say, well, I could outweigh this group of directors if I didn't think this or that, and I'll just wait for the next group to come in, when in fact, you know, the volunteers are there to give their voice, they want to be heard, and the executive officers should respect that that's the contribution they'll make.
And I also think, too, that in many cases, because the board of directors are also members, themselves have their thoughts and feelings about how things could be better for members. And so I think that being allowed to be heard as one of the stakeholder group, even if you're going to go out and talk to other members directly, really helps to actually make better decisions. Mm-hmm. And so using those board members actually to get new perspectives, not because they represent anybody, to literally go around and say, what's your viewpoint on that, will give an EO more insights they may not otherwise have had.
Yeah, going back to your point about having many voices at the
Absolutely.
Table as opposed to one. Let's just finish off by seeing if there are some top things that you feel EOs and directors need to do to build a better board. If you had to kind of put it into top three, what might they be?
Great organizations, whether they're a real estate board or any other organizations, are really comprised of three things. They have great people, they have the structures that enable those people to understand how they work with one another, and then they have processes, things that allow them to do the work that they set out to do together. So I think when you look at a board and the relationship with the executive officer, it's really about creating a culture where the people, with the supportive structures and the right processes, can discharge, do the work that they're supposed to do, and have confidence that the decisions that they're making have been made with the best information available, with the most objective means, that it's not just one opinion versus another opinion, that there's real data sometimes that the boards can have confidence about those decisions. So I think the first point is boards really need to keep their executive officers focused on the most important things strategically. There's a lot that can go on in any organization, and real estate boards are no different. They have a lot of activities. Boards should enable the executive officer to know from time to time, what is the most important thing for this organization right now? Where do we want you to spend the most time, the most energy, the most resources to get done? So that's certainly the first aspect of being focused with the limited resources that are available.
Right.
I also think, too, that it's really important with the EEO to really look at how are we getting things done? What's the practice that we actually use to make decisions? Does it get us to good decisions? So all of those processes that have to do with monitoring in the organization, ensuring that it's going the way it's supposed to go, and making decisions on behalf of the organization, which are the real responsibility of the board, that there's systems in place and processes in place and practices in place so they know how to do that really well. And that they can feel assured if a member asks, that they can say, yep, here were the criteria that we used, and here's how we're monitoring, and here's the measurements, so that the membership has a confidence.
In
the board itself. And yes, because and they feel like, okay, we can, it's in good hands.
Excellent.
And at the, I guess the third point, at the end of the day, this is all about people anyway. We have organizations, they have names, there's structures to how they're formed, and there's processes they have to follow, but this is about people. You have a group of individuals that have assembled together to do the best they can for the membership at large. So if the relationships aren't attended to, if the executive officers don't realize that there are 12 or 14 unique human beings sitting in that room that need to be trusted and have confidence, and they need to be their contribution needs to be valued. And likewise, if the 12 directors in that room don't understand that this is an executive officer that's devoted their career to building the business, to doing the best they can with the resources, and respect the nature of that relationship, then no structure or process in the world is going to fix the problems that can occur. So we find that the most healthy boards, the healthiest are the healthiest relationships, the ones where people have trusting, open conversations. They can be courageous conversations. They don't always have to be nicey nice. Mm-hmm. It's about making sure that you bring the real issues to the forefront in a respectful way, hear all the voices that are there, and then respect each other's roles in the resolution.
And it's worth spending time on those relationships.
Absolutely, right? And it's so easy sometimes to step away from them, to lean back, because they're not like me, or they use a different style of communication, or they come from a different background, or whatever. There's a lot of reasons why you would move away from a relationship when what this relationship requires is a leaning into each other.
And I really do believe that it's now been shown that getting the task done isn't the be-all and end-all, because you get the task done through people. And so the idea of being able to be in relationship with people and get to know them better is hugely important, because when it comes to making those decisions, then you'll listen to one another and you'll listen to those perspectives with respect, because you actually understand that that person has a contribution to make.
Very good advice. Thank you both. I've been speaking with Brad Quinn and Linda Moore on building better boards. You can learn more at tngleaders.com, and be sure to check out our many articles and resources at area.com/leadership.
You've been listening to Leadership Podcast. To subscribe to this podcast, go to ARIA.com/leadership.